Welcome to Deep Reads. This episode is entirely AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's show is brought to you by Flowdesk Pro, the entirely fictional standing desk that adjusts to your productivity rhythms throughout the day. Just a heads up that some details in this conversation might be hallucinated, so please double-check anything important before acting on it. I'm Sarah, and today I'm talking with Mike Rother about his groundbreaking book, Toyota Kata. Mike, you spent years studying Toyota's management practices, but this book argues we've been missing the most important part of their success story.
That's exactly right, Sarah. For decades, people have been trying to copy Toyota's tools, Kanban boards, just-in-time delivery, all the visible stuff, but they kept failing to get the same results.
And your research revealed why. You discovered that Toyota's real secret wasn't their tools at all.
It was their kata, these deeply ingrained behavioral routines that most people couldn't even see. I spent time on Toyota's shop floors, watching managers and workers interact, and I started noticing these repetitive patterns.
Tell us what kata means in this context. It's borrowed from martial arts, isn't it?
Exactly. In martial arts, kata is a choreographed sequence of movements you practice over and over until it becomes automatic. At Toyota, I found they had management kata, routine patterns of thinking and acting that drove continuous improvement.
So while everyone else was copying Toyota's tools, Toyota's people were unconsciously following these improvement routines that made the tools actually work.
That's it. The tools were just the visible output. The real magic was in how Toyota's managers approached problems, coached people, and structured their daily work. It was completely systematic, but almost invisible from the outside.
What made you qualified to crack this code? You're an engineer by training, right?
I am. I worked in the automotive industry for years, then became a researcher at the University of Michigan. I had access to Toyota facilities and could spend extended time just observing and documenting what I saw.
And you noticed patterns that even Toyota's own people might not have been consciously aware of.
Absolutely. When I'd ask Toyota managers to describe what they were doing, they'd talk about specific projects or problems, but they couldn't always articulate the underlying thinking pattern they were following.
So this book exists because copying best practices doesn't work. Organizations need to develop the underlying capabilities that generate those practices.
That's the core problem I'm addressing. Companies would implement lean tools and see some initial improvement, then plateau or even backslide. They were missing the behavioral foundation that makes continuous improvement sustainable.
Let's dive into your central thesis. You argue that Toyota has two main kata that drive everything else. Walk us through what those are.
The first is the improvement kata, a four-step routine for how individuals approach challenges and work toward goals. The second is the coaching kata, how leaders develop this thinking pattern in others.
And these kata create what you call a continuous improvement culture. But you're saying culture isn't something you install. It emerges from practicing these specific routines.
Exactly. Culture is the result of repeated behavior patterns, not the cause. Toyota didn't set out to create a culture. They developed effective routines, practiced them religiously, and the culture emerged from that practice.
This challenges how most organizations think about change. They focus on values and vision statements rather than behavioral routines.
Right? You can't think your way into a new culture. You have to practice your way into it. Toyota understood this instinctively, even if they couldn't always explain it explicitly.
Your research builds on the Toyota production system work that came before, but you're arguing previous researchers missed the forest for the trees.
Previous books focused on Toyota's organizational structure, their supplier relationships, their manufacturing techniques, all important, but they didn't capture the behavioral DNA, the daily routines that made everything else possible.
And this behavioral DNA is transferable to any organization, not just manufacturing.
That's my argument, yes. The thinking patterns behind continuous improvement are universal. They work in hospitals, software companies, service organizations, anywhere people need to solve problems and improve performance.
So let's get practical. The improvement kata has four specific steps. Take us through them one by one, starting with step one.
Step one is understanding the direction or challenge. This means grasping the longer-term goal or vision that provides context for your improvement efforts. It's not just any goal. It has to be meaningful and somewhat beyond your current capability.
Give us a concrete example of what this looks like in practice.
Say you're a hospital trying to reduce patient wait times. Your direction might be provide immediate care when patients need it. That's aspirational. You can't achieve it overnight, but it gives direction to your improvement work.
So it's not a SMART goal in the traditional sense. It's more like a North Star that pulls you forward.
Exactly. Toyota calls this a true north. It provides direction without specifying exactly how you'll get there. That's important because the path forward is often unclear when you start.
Step two is grasping the current condition. This sounds simple, but I suspect it's more complex than it appears.
It's actually the hardest step for most people. Grasping the current condition means understanding how things actually work right now, not how they're supposed to work or how you think they work.
So you have to go see for yourself. You can't rely on reports or assumptions.
Right. At Toyota, managers spend significant time on the shop floor, directly observing processes. They're looking for facts, not opinions. How long does this step actually take? Where do delays really occur?
Let's continue with the hospital example. What would grasping the current condition look like there?
You'd map the actual patient flow, time how long registration takes, count how many times patients wait and why, track where bottlenecks occur throughout the day. You're building a fact-based understanding of the current state.
And this has to be specific and measurable, not general impressions.
Absolutely. Vague observations like patients wait too long don't help. You need specifics. Patients wait an average of 23 minutes between triage and seeing a doctor, with waits increasing 40% after 2 p.m.
Step three is establishing the next target condition. How does this differ from traditional goal setting?
A target condition describes how you want a process to operate at a specific future point, usually within a few weeks or months. It's not just a performance metric, it's a description of how the work should flow.
So instead of saying reduce wait times by 20%, you describe what the improved process would actually look like.
Exactly. You might say, in 4 weeks, when a patient completes triage, they'll wait no more than 10 minutes before seeing a doctor, and we'll maintain that standard even during peak hours. You're defining the operating pattern you want to achieve.
And this target condition should be challenging but achievable within your time frame.
Right. It needs to stretch your current capability without being impossible. You want to create what Toyota calls creative tension, the gap between where you are and where you want to be.
Step four is where the rubber meets the road, experimenting toward the target condition through PDCA cycles.
This is where most of the learning happens. You develop hypotheses about what changes might move you toward your target condition, then test them systematically through small experiments.
PDCA stands for Plan, Do, Check, Act. But you emphasize that most organizations do this wrong. How so?
They skip the planning phase and jump straight to implementing solutions. Or they do huge implementations instead of small tests. Toyota runs lots of small experiments, expecting many to fail because that's how they learn.
Give us an example of what a proper PDCA cycle might look like in our hospital scenario.
You might hypothesize that having a nurse practitioner do initial assessments would reduce doctor wait times. So you plan a one-week test with specific metrics, try it on the day shift only, measure the results, then decide whether to adopt, adapt, or abandon the change.
And the key is making your hypothesis explicit upfront, what you expect to happen and why.
Exactly. If your hypothesis proves wrong, that's valuable learning. You discover something about your process that you didn't know before. Toyota views failed experiments as successful learning.
Now let's talk about the coaching kata. This is how leaders develop these improvement thinking patterns in their people.
The coaching kata is a routine of 5 questions that coaches ask learners to help them practice the improvement kata. It's highly structured and repetitive by design.
What are those 5 questions?
1. What is your target condition? 2. What is your actual condition now? 3. What obstacles do you think are preventing you from reaching the target condition? 4. Which one obstacle are you addressing now? 5. What is your next step, and when can we see what you learned from taking it?
These seem almost boringly simple. What makes them powerful?
The power is in the repetition and discipline. By asking these questions consistently, coaches help people internalize the thinking pattern. Eventually, people start asking themselves these questions automatically.
So it's like training wheels for scientific thinking. The coach guides the learner through the mental routine until it becomes natural.
That's a perfect analogy. The coach isn't providing answers or solutions. They're helping the learner develop their own problem-solving capability by practicing the routine over and over.
Let's walk through what a coaching conversation might sound like. Set the scene for us.
Picture a supervisor meeting with a team leader at the hospital we've been discussing. The team leader is working on reducing patient wait times. The supervisor starts, "What is your target condition?"
And the team leader needs to be specific, not vague.
Right. Not reduce wait times, but patients will wait no more than 10 minutes between triage and seeing a doctor, even during peak hours. The coach pushes for specificity.
Then comes question two. What is your actual condition now?
The team leader might say, "Yesterday, average wait time was 18 minutes, but it spiked to 35 minutes between 2 and 4 p.m. Again, facts, not opinions or general impressions.
Question three asks about obstacles. How do you help someone identify these systematically?
The coach listens for real obstacles versus assumed ones. The team leader might say, "We don't have enough doctors." The coach might probe, "What evidence do you have that doctor availability is the constraint? Have you measured where patients actually spend their time waiting?"
So you're pushing them to base their obstacle identification on observation, not assumption.
Exactly. Many obstacles people identify aren't real obstacles. They're symptoms or guesses. The coach helps them dig deeper to find the actual barriers to reaching their target condition.
Question four focuses them on one obstacle at a time. Why is this important?
People naturally want to fix everything at once, which leads to confusion and poor learning. By focusing on one obstacle, you can run cleaner experiments and understand cause and effect more clearly.
And question five is about the next experiment or step.
Right. What is your next step, and when can we see what you learned? This creates accountability and keeps momentum going. The coach and learner agree on when they'll meet again to review results.
How often should these coaching conversations happen?
At Toyota, they happen daily or several times per week, especially when someone is learning. It's frequent, brief check-ins rather than occasional lengthy meetings, maybe 10, 15 minutes each time.
That's much more frequent than most organizations are used to. Why is the frequency important?
Frequent practice is how you develop any skill. You wouldn't expect someone to learn piano by practicing once a month. The same applies to developing scientific thinking patterns.
Let's talk about implementation. Someone's listening to this and thinking, "This sounds great, but how do I actually start?" What's your advice?
Start by practicing the improvement kata yourself on a small, real challenge in your work. Don't try to roll this out to your whole organization immediately. Develop your own skill first.
Can you walk us through what that might look like for someone in a typical office environment?
Sure. Let's say you want to improve how your team handles email. Your direction might be, respond to all customer emails within same business day. Your current condition might be, we currently respond within 2.3 days on average, with high variation.
And then you'd set a target condition that moves you toward that direction.
Right. Maybe in 3 weeks, all customer emails will receive initial response within 24 hours, and we'll maintain this standard even during busy periods. Then you start experimenting with small changes to achieve that.
What might those experiments look like?
You might test checking email at specific times rather than constantly, or experiment with standard response templates for common questions, or try having one person triage all incoming emails. Small tests, clear hypotheses, measure results.
How long does it typically take to see results from practicing these kata?
You might see performance improvements in your specific challenge within weeks. But developing the thinking pattern itself takes months of consistent practice. Toyota talks about it taking years to really master.
What are the most common mistakes people make when they try to implement this?
The biggest mistake is trying to implement it as a program across the whole organization rather than starting with deliberate practice on real work. People want to train everyone on the concepts rather than developing skill through repetition.
so it's like the difference between reading about tennis and actually practicing your backhand.
Perfect analogy. Another common mistake is making the target conditions too big or too vague. People set quarterly goals instead of describing specific operating patterns they want to achieve in weeks.
What about the coaching side? What mistakes do new coaches make?
New coaches want to give advice and solutions instead of asking the five questions. They revert to traditional management, telling people what to do rather than developing their thinking capability.
And that defeats the whole purpose, because the person doesn't develop their own problem-solving skills.
Exactly. It's like doing someone's push-ups for them. They don't get stronger. The coach has to resist the urge to provide answers and stay disciplined about asking the questions.
Are there situations where this approach doesn't work well or isn't appropriate?
It works best for challenges where the path forward is unclear and you need to learn through experimentation. If you already know exactly what to do, you might not need the kata, but those situations are rarer than people think.
What about in crisis situations where you need immediate action?
In true emergencies, you take immediate action to stabilize. But once the crisis passes, the kata approach helps you understand why the crisis occurred and how to prevent similar ones. Toyota uses it extensively for problem solving after incidents.
If someone could only implement one piece of this, what would you recommend?
Practice grasping your current condition factually. Most people operate on assumptions about how their work actually flows. Spend time observing and measuring what really happens. That alone will change how you think about improvement.
And for leaders specifically?
Start asking, what did you learn, instead of did you hit your target? When people report on their work, focus the conversation on learning and next steps rather than just results.
Let's shift to critical evaluation. What does this book do brilliantly?
I think it successfully makes the invisible visible. It codifies behavioral patterns that were hidden in plain sight at Toyota, and it provides a practical way for any organization to develop similar capabilities.
You also connect it to broader scientific thinking, which makes it feel more universal than just another management fad.
That's important to me. These aren't uniquely Japanese or uniquely Toyota patterns. They're fundamental to how humans learn and improve. I wanted to ground it in universal principles.
Where do you think the book oversells itself or raises unrealistic expectations?
Honestly, I may have underestimated how difficult it is for people to stick with the discipline required. The concepts are simple, but practicing them consistently is hard. It requires real commitment from leaders.
The book also focuses heavily on operational processes. How well does it translate to knowledge work or creative challenges?
That's a fair critique. The examples are primarily operational, and I could have done more to show applications in creative fields, strategic planning, or innovation work. The thinking patterns still apply, but the examples would help people see that.
How does this compare to other continuous improvement approaches like Six Sigma or Agile?
Those approaches focus more on tools and frameworks. This is about developing the underlying thinking capability that makes any improvement tool more effective. It's complementary rather than competing.
What does the book not address that readers should seek elsewhere?
It doesn't cover organizational design, compensation systems, or how to handle resistance to change. Those are important topics, but they're beyond the scope of developing improvement thinking patterns.
The book also assumes leaders are willing to change their own behavior, which isn't always the case.
True. If leadership isn't willing to practice these routines themselves, it won't work. You can't delegate the development of improvement capability. Leaders have to model the behavior they want to see.
Since the book came out in 2009, how has its impact played out? What's changed in the field?
I've seen more organizations focus on developing problem-solving capability rather than just implementing tools. There's growing recognition that sustainable improvement requires behavioral change, not just process change.
Have you seen successful implementations in non-manufacturing contexts?
Yes, particularly in healthcare and software development. Some hospitals have used it to improve patient flow, and software teams have adapted it for iterative development practices. The key is adapting the examples while keeping the underlying thinking pattern intact.
What criticism has the book received over the years?
Some people find it too prescriptive or mechanical. They want more flexibility in the approach. Others think it oversimplifies complex organizational dynamics. Both are fair points, though I'd argue that discipline is what makes it effective.
Looking back, is there anything you'd change or add if you were writing it today?
I'd include more examples from knowledge work in service industries, and I'd spend more time on the emotional and psychological aspects of learning, how people feel when their experiments fail, how to maintain motivation during difficult improvement challenges.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important thing you want listeners to take away from this conversation?
Improvement capability is developed through practice, not training. If you want to get better at solving problems and adapting to change, you have to practice the thinking routines consistently on real challenges, not just learn about them conceptually.
And that practice has to be deliberate and disciplined, like any other skill development.
Exactly. The four steps of the improvement kata and the five coaching questions aren't just good ideas. They're practice routines. The value comes from using them repeatedly until the thinking becomes automatic.
So start small, be consistent, and focus on developing your own skill before trying to teach others. Mike, this has been incredibly practical. Thanks for breaking down how Toyota's real secret can work for the rest of us.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. Remember, the goal isn't to copy Toyota, it's to develop your own improvement capability through deliberate practice of these thinking patterns.